for January 23rd, 2017. This is episode 59 of the PHP Roundtable. Today's discussion is all about PHP 7.1. I'm your host, Sammy K. Powers. So today we're talking about PHP 7.1, which was the latest minor version of PHP, which was released on December 1st, so just a little over a month ago. Today we're discussing some things that went on behind the scenes that brought this new version of PHP to the stable release that we see today, and we'll also look at some of the new features that are found in PHP 7.1, and a little teaser for the future, we'll be also looking at a sneak peek of PHP 7.2 and beyond. So now that we know what we're talking about, let's meet our panel, and as always, in no particular order. I already mentioned him once, but it's Davey Chaffick, Rhymes with Traffic, developer advocate at Akamai and release manager of PHP 7.1. Welcome, Davey.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We also have Sean Dubois, the backend developer at Infinity and works on MessagePack and MailPars. Did I say that? Infinity?
Oh, Infinity.
Infinity. Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Awesome being here.
And finally, we have Levi Morrison, who's the computational scientist at Brigham Young University and happens to contribute to PHP. Welcome, Levi.
Thank you.
And where's Brigham Young is in?
It's in Provo, Utah.
Provo, Utah. Yes, like my buddy Glenn, who was on not too long ago in a couple of different podcasts. So today, since we're talking about 7.1, we are going to take a quick look behind the scenes. I always love talking about internals stuff, and since all y'all are internal people and played a role in bringing 7.1 to light, I'd love to talk with you all about some of the things that went into making this new release. First of all, thank you all for all of your contributions. Really appreciate it. On behalf of the community, thank you very much. So speaking of how these things are being released, because back in the day, PHP didn't get released all that often, right? Like we went like many years between even minor releases. So today it seems like there's a lot more releases happening much more frequently. What changed in years past to now?
That's not quite true, and it is exactly true. So at one point, so like in the 4X series, like from 4.0 to 1 to 2, Actually, let me start over. The problem that we've had, actually, is that our semantic versioning has been terrible. So, like, 4.12, I believe it was, introduced superglobals, like, in a micro-release. Like, that's when we added superglobals. We were never good at that sort of thing. So it's not a really good idea to look at the versioning as an indicator of the cadence of the release of the language. With that said, obviously, we had 5.2, then there was kind of a big gap for 5.3, like I think it was like 4 years or something. And that was because, you know, like static binding and a few large changes came into play at that point. We didn't have any sort of formal release schedule, so it was just kind of whenever we got around to it. And then, of course, 6. And 6 kind of screwed everything up, right? There was several years where we were working towards 6 and it never happened. Eventually, 5.3 did come out. And then we kind of decided, look, we need to be a little more regular about this. We have a obligation to our community and like the Linux distros and all that kind of stuff to help them, you know, make this language predictable. And so since then we've had the yearly cadence. So once a year we get a release. Now, having said that, PHP 7 was not quite on the year. Like, it was 2 or 3 months late, so to speak. But then again, it was a major version. So that was just, it was a decision that was made. It was explicit. 7.1 followed up almost a year to the day with its release, right? So annual releases, we have 3-year life cycles. So first 2 years are active support. Then you go into security support, only support for the last year. That means we only have 3 active branches at any given time. We do have a slightly odd situation right now where we extended 5.6 by 1 more year, just to give people a chance to upgrade to 7. So 5.6 will actually outlast 7.0 by a few months, and we should have 7.1, 2, and I believe 3, maybe even 4, if we go that far, by the time 6 is retired.
Do you see whatever the last version of PHP 7 is, say it's PHP 7.4, do you see that getting active support until maybe 2 extra years when PHP 8 comes out?
I think it will depend a lot on what exactly those backwards compatibility breaks are, and whether we feel it's justified to extend the support cycle so that people migrate, right? So 7 honestly didn't have that many backwards compatibility breaks, so and we gave an extension there. So we might give an extension. I would prefer to give an extension. Working at a university, things are... You have some freedom to choose when you upgrade and whatnot, but it's always nice to have options. And I know a lot of businesses that are more like bottom-line driven, you know, they need more time to do that because they're busy working on things that provide intrinsic value. Whereas generally speaking, bumping your PHP version is not adding value. So I don't know. We'll see how it comes. But if there's a lot of large breaking changes, then I expect definitely, yes, there will be an extension of that period.
So there is sort of something that we're not talking about here, which is that the release managers for 5.6 are gracious enough that they have agreed to support it for that extra time as well. And so, you know, that is either a decision that the release managers of the final 7 release will have to make, or someone will have to step in and make that. There's a person cost in there as well. It's not just, yes, of course we're going to support it. There is obviously people involved in that decision. And you know, we're very lucky, that they decided to do that. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason for the upgrade took so long for Etsy was it's surprising how many extensions we had pulled in, because we looked at doing HHVM as well, and that was the only reason that pushed us to do anything. Honestly, it was like we had this huge possible performance improvement, and so we were like really excited to look at new versions of PHP. But like, man, the only blocker for PHP 7 and probably PHP forever was always extensions, because it's really easy to educate people about like, hey, change these language things. You could have every PHP developer port the code base over, but it was like only a handful of people could help extensions, and it's amazing how many PHP extensions are abandoned. Like it's sort of like, I think, like for me, I'm not heavily involved in core. Like I did more extension stuff. It's sort of sad. Like I wish more people would get involved in extension stuff. I see a lot of people who want to like jump in and like make core changes, but like the thing that needs the most love, at least coming from a person who looks at PHP just from a business standpoint, was always extensions first, because that's what inserts data that people pay for. Like nobody cares as much about cool language features. Like it was always performance and extensions for me.
Yeah, I remember the Go PHP 7 project was really focused on getting those extensions upgraded, because so much had changed in the back end for PHP. Not much had broken on the front end in user land, but so much had changed in the back end that there was a huge push to get people involved in updating and maintaining these extensions. And I think quite a few extensions that had been kind of dead, more or less, got new maintainers to take over them, which was really cool after effect of the PHP 7 Go project. But now the PHP 7 Go project's about getting people upgraded to PHP 7, right? Is that kind of where it's at now?
Yeah, I'm not completely up to date with like what the Go PHP... I mean, the Go PHP 7 was awesome for me because I was a C, C++ developer, and so I jumped on, I'm probably going to butcher his name, Lawrence, was huge. Like, he took a lot of his personal time to get me onboarded with extension internals. So that is like one of the most successful open source projects I've ever seen. You had like all these people who were coming on and helping in IRC and like back and forth in GitHub reviews. So like I was super, like I have like super fond memories of how that went. I was surprised how quickly it went. Like we, like Etsy estimated internally that things would not go nearly as fast as they did, thanks to people giving up their spare time to make things better. But I don't know what it's doing now, but yeah, it's a bummer because it's like 7 to 7.1, there's all these little changes, and those abandoned extensions all of a sudden break for people, and it's a bad situation to be in.
There is a push right now to get an up-to-date list of all the maintainers and getting people to pick up extensions, and I think that's been pretty successful. Like, we've had new people step in on PDO and I think Firebase and some others as well. So we're trying really hard to fix that, but it really is just trying to find people with the skill set. The PHP internals ramp up is not a quick process, right?
Yeah. I was going to mention that, as well as this is sort of jumping into the future, so we don't have to go there right now. But that's one reason people want to make the core language faster, so that you only reach for extensions when you need C bindings or something like that. You never have to reach for the internals just to get performance or something like of that nature. So that's one reason, like the JIT project and some of the other optimizations that they've been landing in master that I don't know if you've been following, but there is work towards making the language faster, not necessarily just for making it faster's sake, but if you can make it faster, then you don't have to reach for extensions as often, which makes it much, much easier to maintain.
Yeah, the hard part about that, though, is that you want to bind a lot of these C extensions. These upstream projects distribute headers for the bindings. It's not a performance thing, but it's just like a code completeness. Like, I could re-implement message pack in PHP, but I would always introduce little bugs. But hopefully, if I'm just, you know, putting a thin wrapper around their C API, there'll be less.
Yeah.
HHVM went the user land code route, though. Like, HHVM extensions are mostly written in Hack or PHP. They have a small, like, shim if you need to access a C library or whatever. And that worked out pretty well for them, it seems.
Yeah, I think there's been some discussion actually about redoing, I guess a discussion that I don't know if we've talked about on the PHP roundtable or not, but at least looking at HHVM's standard library being written in PHP and Hack, that because it's so fast, they were able to do that and not see any performance decrease. Whereas PHP 7 now has the same performance, arguably maybe even faster, and perhaps rewriting the standard lib in PHP to onboard more internals contributors, perhaps? I don't know. I think that has been discussed, right?
Yeah, some portions can be more ported. For instance, if we actually get just-in-time compilations or optimizations, certain functions will actually perform better if you move them out of internals. Because as soon as you hit an internal seam, the just-in-time optimizer can't really look inside and evaluate the C code. It doesn't understand that. So things like in specifically the ext standard folder in the source tree, this has things like, you know, array map, array filter, reduce, those types of functions. If we get our performance up, it may actually be faster to implement those in PHP rather than directly in C because of the optimizations that are able to happen because of that. Also, if we get inlining, I know Nikita Popov is working on that, and if it lands, then that would be a huge boost too.
There was also talk of PHP in PHP, which, to clarify, is not like PHP parser or whatever, which is, you know, the PHP language written in PHP, but the ability to embed PHP code inside of extensions, which would then be able to, that PHP code would be able to execute and take advantage of all the JIT and everything if that comes. And that makes it a lot easier to actually build that extension.
Yeah, I would love for that, because one of the things, you spend a lot of time with LXR and you just want to jump to the definition. It would help a lot of people who write PHP but don't necessarily write C to, instead of guessing what a function does that's poorly documented, to just go to LXR and look at the PHP definition if we unroll stuff. But I mean, I would put my voice that C is the one true language, and and I would be sad to see it go.
C extensions aren't going to go away anytime soon, even if we get, let's say we get all of these improvements I've mentioned. We get function inlining at runtime and other optimizations from just-in-time optimizations, compiling to native assembly, possibly. Let's say we get all of those. C extensions still aren't going anywhere, right? We're not going to rewrite, like Sean already mentioned, some of these extensions that already exist in C world just because we can in PHP. You'd prefer the upstream maintainers to do that, and then all you do is maintain the bindings. So they're not going to go away anywhere, just maybe reached for less often.
You might find Shamu there, right? In C world?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so Davey, speaking of SeaWorld, you're a release manager for 7.1. I don't even know how you got involved with becoming a release manager. What happened there? And was it the worst decision of your life? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so here's how that went down. So there was a chat either on IRC or in the Stack Overflow room, I don't remember, that said, you know, hey, we have to, you know, figure out what release managers are. Actually, I think maybe it was an internals list saying, you know, hey, is anyone interested in being release manager? And I put forward that I would be interested in co-release managing because I'm very well aware of the fact that my C skills are not too sharp. And there's a limit to my abilities to, like, review code and ensure valid, you know, none of the problems that we don't want to come up. And so there was an option for Joe to co-release manage with me, and that's what people voted for. So there was a vote on the wiki. That wasn't an RFC, it's just a small vote. And to my surprise, me and Joe were picked. Not Joe, I mean, he's fantastic, but that I was picked.
Joe Watkins, right?
Yeah, Joe Watkins. I will admit I didn't realize it was like the full 3-year commitment. Like, I should have realized that, but you know, it is a 3-year commitment at least, and that's, you know, it's fine. Like, it's not a difficult job. The biggest problem is that, you know, every 2 weeks some time has to be made to make something happen. But thanks to, you know, having Joe as the co-release manager, we've pretty much traded out, and it's been completely nonverbal. It's just I've not been around, so he's done the releases, or he's not been around, so I've done the releases. It's not a big deal. The fact of the matter is that most of the work is being done by other people. We're mostly just responsible for actually making sure the release gets rolled, pushed into, you know, Git, and the releases themselves, the tarballs, get pushed up and signed and all this kind of stuff. So it's really just a lot of housekeeping. The process doesn't take that long. Like, it's a couple of hours on a Tuesday. We always roll on a Tuesday, just in case something goes wrong. So there are other community members. So there's a gentleman from Microsoft called Steven, who rolls the Windows binaries. So every time we roll a release, we push out an email to all the release managers, and he'll come back with, hey, I've rolled the Windows releases, and that goes through, like, in continuous integration that they have. And also Remy from Red Hat. He runs integration tests against many different versions of Fedora and Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and I think CentOS as well, and reports back. And he also runs it on, like, ARM architectures and ARM64 architectures and all these crazy things as well. So he does a whole ton of testing. So assuming that all of those things come back good, and they don't always, we've had some problems, then we will release on the following Thursday. I have written a Docker-based container that will effectively roll that release for me. I just input the version, you know, my SSH key, my GPG signature, etc., and it will do most of the work for me, and just leave me with the tarballs and the signature files at the end. I do not believe that Joe is using that, but I'm using it because I ran into issues the first couple. So there were some issues, like, in the in the build-up process. Like, at one point, you probably saw the email. I think I overwrote master with 7.1, something like that. Completely blew up master. It was great. One of the releases that I did, I built purely on my Mac. The first one I did, I believe. And the Mac operating file system has, like, extended attributes that get rolled into the tarball. And while it didn't break anything, when you untarred it on, say, a Linux box, it gave you a whole ton of warnings. And that's not the kind of, like, level of professionalism that we want to have put forward, right, for this project. So so that's why I moved to the Docker container. And it's super simple, super easy. It all just works pretty much. There was a whole bunch of emails we have to send out, like, way too many emails to different mailing lists and all this kind of stuff. But like I say, it's mostly just sort of caretaking. You know, making sure that everything that needs to be merged in is merged in. That includes security fixes. Making sure that nothing is broken. I do run tests on 4 different Ubuntu builds and 4 different CentOS or RHEL builds, again, in Docker containers. And there are some issues with that. Like, FPM tests always fail. And that's just sort of a limitation of being inside of the Docker container. But yeah, it's really just a judgment call at that point.
Are you passing along your Docker container to the next release manager of 7.1 or 7.2?
It's already in, it's on GitHub. It's public. Anyone can use it. I know that Anatol, who has also been amazing, he's one of the 7.0 release maintainers. We kind of have a buddy that works with us from the previous version that kind of walks us through all the process and everything. So when 7.2 does come along, myself and or Joe will work with those new release managers as well to get them up to speed. But yeah, so it is available. He's trying to get up to speed with Docker and to get that running as well. It basically just means, like, we've had some issues in the past with people, compiling on different systems with different versions of Bison and all this kind of stuff, or RE2C. This just makes sure that everyone is essentially rolling in the same Debian Jesse environment with the same dependencies and build environment. So
did you take advantage of your release manager role and circumvent the RFC process and sneak in any features of your own?
So we can't really do that, though it did actually happen. The role of the release manager is, I think, twofold. One, as I said, is to kind of steward. The other one is to make sure there's no major unintentional backwards compatibility changes, to make sure that nothing gets put in that shouldn't be. So we've had some issues with contributors putting stuff into the branch that shouldn't be there, not been approved for that branch, that kind of stuff. But there was the change to when you put extra arguments into a function, and it started to throw an error exception for that, e too many args type thing. And I didn't think that was quite appropriate. We should have a more concrete exception for that. It was discussed, but I did end up making and sort of unilaterally committing the change that throws a argument count error exception.
There was an RFC for that, though, right?
There was an RFC for the throwing of the exception, but not the type of exception. It was initially just throwing the top level error exception, and now what we have is this argument count error, which actually extends type error, purely because some functions will throw type errors when you haven't passed in enough arguments. Because that's seen as a null, which is then a type error in strict mode, right? Mm-hmm. It actually extends from type error. But that part of the change was not quite unilateral, but certainly didn't go through the RFC process. And didn't break. Like, that was super exciting for me.
You voted against that particular RFC, I remember.
I don't think I did.
You did? Because I feel like you were like, not on my watch, BC breaks on a
this is
on
true.
A
this is
version.
True. Actually, no, you could absolutely be right. I was very vehement that, with 7.0 obviously having some BC breaks, we did really good with 7.0. For a major version, the number of, backwards compatibility changes were so minor, it was incredible. So to then have a 0.1 introduce BC breaks felt really kind of bad. I really feel like a lot of people wait for the 0.1 to get up from the previous version for major releases. So I really struggled with that. We really only had two BC breaks, one of which kind of made sense, which is, around the whole adding nullable types and the reflection API. And it was stuff that had only been added in 7.0. So it wasn't stuff that was, used everywhere. But yeah, definitely BC breaks were something I very much didn't want. They did happen, but at the end of the day, I'm okay with it.
That was me, by the way. I did that.
Yeah, thanks.
I was actually about to ask you, Levi, what was... I was wanting to talk about some features of PHP 7.1. You actually contributed. So what was the thing that you added, or things?
Well, David just mentioned the nullable types and... In 7.0, we created a new reflection type that was intended to model type information separately from parameters, because previously all we had was parameters, and so it was just sort of in this conglomerate reflection parameter thing. And it had a bunch of methods that didn't really make sense for return types, but it didn't... the toString type changed for certain things when we added nullable types, because we already had nullable types in a limited form already, we just didn't have a notation for it, right? Like at the type level. So if you had an optional parameter that defaulted to null, now it has a question mark in the type to reflect that we actually have that at the type level now, and not just a parameter detail.
Well, there's a slight difference there, because you can have question mark whatever without a default, which Correct. Means you must pass a null in, right? At least it's trick types, right? So there's a minor difference between the two.
Yeah, there is difference. My point, though, is that before, if you wrote, for instance, int $f equals null, and you got the toString of the type information, it was just int. And now it will say question int instead, to represent the fact that the accepted types for that parameter are int or null. So that was the VC break that got mentioned, and it was heated because there are some projects out there that were using it already, and the reason I really pushed through is, like, we can break these four known projects now so that this API is actually worth something, you know, in the future. That was my perspective anyway. I don't know. I think we made the right decision overall, but it wasn't one of the nice.
I was fine with that one. I was fine with that one. Yeah. I mean, anything that got added in 7.0 was such limited use, in my opinion, that it was the best. If we were going to break it, 7.1 was absolutely the best time to do that.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this stuff's only been out for a short period of time. We have four projects, literally four projects that use this. Like, we can fix this. We can migrate this, right? This is doable. So I did nullable types, which just means you can formally declare that a type must be some named type or null, including as return types. It's nothing particularly special. I just think that it was a necessary thing to add, because there are a lot of functions out there that are returning a given type or null, and part of it stems from, like, C land, where it's common to return a pointer to something, so you either return a null pointer or the thing. And in Java world, you know, it's common to, well, not common necessarily, for better or worse, types by default allow null always in Java. So because of the culture both in C and Java, which PHP sort of inherits part from each of those communities, there's just a lot of code out there that uses that idiom. And I actually don't like the idiom. I'd prefer not to have it at all. But this is just a recognizing that there's a lot of code out there that has this, and being able to formalize it has value. So because I added return types for 7.0, I felt sort of responsible to make sure they got added for 7.1 as well.
Yeah, I have to say that nullable types is one of those features that makes it feel more complete. I've used it so much after getting all nerded out on, like, being able to, like,
scalars.
Was that?
Scalars.
Scalars. Yeah. Thank you. type hint scalars. I got the string. I got the int. I got all those. And to be able to just do a question mark before each one of those and enforce the null or string is so cool. And I have to say, if I remember correctly, there was a little bit of a discussion in the internals list before nullable types got added, saying that why add nullable types when we need to have full union type support? And that would basically cover that use case.
So union types was an RFC I worked on that failed. It ultimately didn't get enough support in voting. And I'm really sad about it because...
I don't think it failed because it didn't get enough support. I think there was an issue that was brought up towards the end that enough people felt was valid enough to knock it out. And it's similar to, like, property types, right? There were just some ambiguities that we couldn't resolve. And that's really why people voted against it.
As the author of that RFC, I actually don't know what that issue you're referring to would be for union types.
I'll have to look it up on the mailing list. Yeah. There was definitely something that was brought up, and I'm like, ah, yeah, I actually don't know how that gets resolved. And yeah, it felt to me like there was just an ambiguity in it rather than the not support for it. I wholly support it. I think it's a great thing, but I do think I voted against it as well.
Anyway, so regardless of how people felt about it in general or specifically the implementation and vote, we didn't get it, so don't plan on it in the future. Usually when something gets rejected, it's quite some time. That doesn't mean it's off the table. It just usually means wait a while. Sometimes we've had RFCs that failed and they were basically reproposed later with minimal changes and they succeeded. So, sometimes it's just people not open to the idea and like things can move and shift. So we'll see. I think union types, if we propose it differently, along with intersection types, maybe it will succeed. But, I think just initially they're, I think nullable types as implemented, I did make sure that we were very careful to not cause a potential compatibility issue with union types in the future. So as it stands, if you write question int, then in the future, if we had union types, that would pose no semantic problems if you wrote null or int, or excuse me, int or null or null or int. In that vein, we added the iterable pseudotype, right? And that's a union of array and traversable. And so that's
but not a standard object or standard class.
That's correct. Not any given object type, just traversable and array. So that's an example of a specific union that's valuable. And I think that we may see more examples of that in the future. For instance, I think at some point we'll probably have a number or num type that's a union of int and float. And part of that may be facilitated by the need to use big integers and other things so that the detail of which number you're using becomes less important. But the iterable type is actually one of my favorite features of 7.1. I have like a lot of my contributions today at PHP, aside from the project itself, I'm talking like at work and stuff, is more like library stuff. So on the rare event that I do PHP at work, because I'm typically doing more science things, it's like library code. And being able to write iterable on all my parameters now, instead of nothing and then documenting only pass something that can be used in a for each loop, like all over, like I probably have like, I don't know, 80 to 100 iterable types in my libraries at work already. Wow. Like, I love that particular union. Yeah, I hope we get full union types Sunday. And intersection types didn't actually go to vote. I felt there wasn't any need to move forward with it given the time constraints and the fact that unions failed. So, but intersection types is basically the idea that you can require that a parameter will accept all of these types. So if you said, I need this thing to be countable and an iterator, then if it implements both those interfaces, then it will just work. You don't have to extract a new supertype called countable iterator and have everybody implement that interface, which is just an aggregation of those two other interfaces. So I think intersection types has more value, especially since we started, you know, we have scalar types and we have return types now. I think as we've added more features to our type system, people will eventually become more interested in interfaces than they have historically. And then a feature like intersection types will be more valuable. But yeah, so unions failed, but we got a specific union iterable, and that's good, at least in my opinion.
We also got the union type, really, I mean, really, for catching, right? So catching exceptions, you can actually now do unions for that.
Yeah, so specifically just for catching exceptions, you can do unions.
Yeah, so in the catch block, you would have you would specify the exception that you want to catch like you would always, but you could also specify another one that's delimited by a pipe, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. You just join them together with pipes. So that's another case of us getting unions in some limited capacity.
That'll definitely clear up some multi-line catch blocks that I've definitely seen in a number of code bases. I Hey, Sean, I'm curious, what was your contribution to 7.1?
So the one I did, I love listening to you academic people. You talk about all these high-minded, like very like designy things, and I come at it from just let's make things not seg fault. I worked on the class constant visibility modifier. So just as you can like add public private protected to a property, you can now do the same for class constants. And really the only reason for me was it was a non-controversial thing that I assumed would go through without much argument as far as an RFC. And I think it did. Like there was maybe only one no and 20 some yays. But it was a lot of fun. It was a reason to get involved and like actually learn more. It was really just to scratch my own itch because I like the challenge of it. But and then I promptly went through and changed my code to use it even though it didn't really need it. but yeah, no, I'm a big I like the consistency of it. That was really it for me. I prefer like a language with a small feature set yet consistent is really like what my thing. So like I'm more of like a C and Golang sort of person. Bigger languages, it scare me. Like having to write, you know, any C++ is an exercise in confusion. So that's where I come from.
I can't remember if I voted yes on that or just didn't vote altogether on it, but I liked it from the perspective of unifying. So one of my biggest issues with PHP that nobody ever seems to mention, when people rant on PHP, nobody ever mentions this, but this is like a fundamental issue that affects everything that exists in PHP, I swear, is that we have separate symbol tables for everything. So constants have their own symbol table, a function, class. So that means you can have a class, a constant, a function, all with the same name, and they go into different slots. So you can't know...
Almost everything.
Yeah, almost everything.
Interfaces, traits, and classes traits all and, share.
Yeah, they share. But like it's actually and then inside of a class interface trait that bucket, you know, that you share or they have separate symbol tables for properties, methods, constants, and it's problematic. Like, that's an example of inconsistency, and that's one reason I liked this RFC is like we have visibility modifiers on properties and methods. Why don't we have them on constants? Right? And so I don't know if it will ever happen. That my largest two hopes for backwards compatibility breaks at some point in the future would be to unify those tables. And there's a bunch of fallout issues because of that, right? So for instance, currently with functions inside of a namespace, if you don't use the fully qualified namespace, it will look in the current namespace for that function, and then it will look in global. But in classes, you have a different behavior, where it will check in that namespace, doesn't find it, trigger the autoloader, and then if the autoloader doesn't succeed, then fail. And then constants have yet another different behavior because we have a feature called bare words, which is if the constant doesn't exist in that, then it will just evaluate to a string of that has those characters, right? So if you did const foo, it would evaluate to a string of foo, right? So like, mm-hmm. That's crazy, and it's caused all sorts of problems. That's why we have class autoloading, but no other type of autoloading. That's why in properties we have magic get set, but then we also have call when, you know, if we had implemented everything from a more simplister, robust point of view, it would all just be unified. You'd have get that happens to be a call, right? It turns a closure or a callable of some kind. So I don't know that we will ever successfully unify those, but if we could, that would be the largest, greatest change, in my opinion, that we could make. And so, things like Sean adding the constant visibility modifiers, like that's a step towards unifying behavior of things, which I really like.
So if you want to go that far, you should also make everything, all identifiers, case sensitive.
Yes, that you have to do that, actually, because constants are case sensitive, but other things aren't. So if you unify them, you...
Variables are.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't referring to variables as symbols, but sure. I mean, someone... I can see your point there. But yeah, moving towards case sensitive everything would be required as part of it. And that's why it's it hasn't happened yet. Like, it's a huge break. Lots of little sub Fallout issues. But if it succeeds, it actually makes certain we get features we couldn't have before. Automatically now, we would have a feature for auto-loading functions and classes. And you could now refer to symbols and get closures from those symbols without any extra syntactic overhead. If you've ever tried to pass a namespace function as a callable, like a callback to something, and you have to write the full namespace out in a string, it's just horrible. And yeah, there's just lots of things that come from that. So thank you, Sean, for adding one more piece of consistency to our language.
On the bright side, PHP for me does embody that hacker spirit. It sort of is cool that people come together and throughout these RFCs, and even if they aren't fully thought through, I bet like autoload and other stuff like this, you know, things that you don't use often have solved someone's strange problem that you never really realized existed. So I don't know. I think it's, even though it has its ports, it like symbolizes, like, it's nice that we don't have like a benevolent, like we don't have to send an email to, you know, Google and have someone employed by them reject our feature because, you know, they own it. Like, no one owns PHP. So even if it's messed up, it's messed up in that sort of like anarchist commune sort of way. You know, everyone does their little bit to make it a little bit better.
Well, what blows my mind is the fact that class constant visibility is fundamental to object-oriented support in a language. And the fact that PHP just got it in PHP 7.1 it blows my mind, not only because that's sort of a feature that you would think would have been added originally, but, you know, just because of the nature of how PHP has been developed, that wouldn't be expected. But the fact that I, as a PHP, grew up as a PHP developer, with that being pretty much my first language. My first language is actually QBasic, but I'm over my go-tos. I actually do some go-tos here and there just to remember QBasic. But no, in all reality, though, I never thought of a class constant needing to be private. I, in my mind, thought that class constants were inherently public all the time, and that's why you have a class constant, is because it's this public thing that things can access. It changed my mind. It's like, oh wait, this is just a property on a class. Why can't we just make it private or protected? I just don't. That's what blows my mind.
Well, and also, isn't there like a modifier? I forget the rules around it, but there's like a modifier for properties that they are constant as well. Like, I forget, there was something about this. Like, you can implement a constant via a property. Or am I making this up?
Final?
Yeah, there's like final as well and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. It's all very, it seems like things are just sort of built ad hoc. I don't mind it though. It doesn't bother me. So as you see, as I don't know about final. I just like
I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah, I enjoy building hacky fun projects with it, like, now so I try not to let it bother me too much to think of. It's the same thing with like C and undefined behavior. Like, if you like laid up awake at night and thought about how many things are going to break in the future because we didn't think it through, I imagine you'd never sleep. So I just choose to ignore it.
Yeah, final only applies to classes themselves and methods.
So there was like, I forget, like when I suggested this, someone was like, why not just add final to properties? And like, there was a conversation about it that ended up just getting dropped. It's just, there's a million solutions to these problems because things aren't like,
yeah. So for instance, you could say that you don't need private constants if you could have a private class inside of that class that has public constants, right? So yeah. You can implement things in multiple ways.
There's a lot more features that came packed in 7.1, including void return types, which I think was the very first feature added to 7.1. I think it almost got added to 7 because Andrea Folds put that. I just remember that being like, whoa, we already have void return types in 7.1, and we just released 7.0. We already talked about iterable pseudotypes, nullable types, class constant visibility, the multi-catch. Now, the other thing that I did actually want to mention is that mcrypt has been officially deprecated in 7.1, will be removed in PHP 8, I'm assuming. And this is a very good thing, as mcrypt is an old C library that hasn't been maintained in years and years and years and years. So if you're using mcrypt, make sure to look into libsodium. We've talked about this on the podcast in a couple of different episodes in the past. So we can come back to that when we officially remove it. And we'll probably have a whole episode on libsodium and some other things when we talk about infosec and security within PHP. Scott R. Suzuki has been working hard on getting libsodium added to PHP Core. So that would be a really cool thing to get added. There's been some inconsistent behavior fixes of the this variable. It's not as confusing as JavaScript when we're referring to the this variable, but the little bit of weird things. I actually didn't look into the nuanced things that got changed for this. Does anybody know off the top of their head what changed with that?
A bunch of edge cases that should never have been there. It's one of those things that if you're using it, you're using the language wrong. Now it's codified, and it will actually break.
Yeah, so I can't remember all of the details. We got a round of, I think we had a round of fixing this in 7.0 as well, didn't we?
Yeah, there were some changes there too.
Yeah, so like I can't remember which ones made it in 7 and which ones made it in 7.1, but things like in certain cases you could have properties or function parameter names or things like that is this, and then if you did weird things like abused back traces and debug info and other things, you could like goof around with the this variable. And so basically they're removing all.
So I'm looking at the RFC right now. You can actually, you could use it as a static, you could declare it as a static variable.
Yeah. Like why? Yeah.
You could make it global. You could overwrite it in a for each, like A is this would overwrite it. You could unset it. Like these are dumb things. Like these are things that you shouldn't be doing. All of those things are now gone. There's a bunch of them.
Basically, the goal is anytime when you refer to this, it should only mean this, and you shouldn't be able to alter it or use it as a variable in any other context. That's the goal.
True that. Well, there's been quite a few other fixes, changes, and all kinds of things in 7.1. It was a really great release. I know Lee. I don't know his last name. He made a lot of changes to the random number generators in 7.1. And I think, I could be wrong on this, but I think mtrand is now, rand is just an alias to mtrand, and srand is just an alias to, srand is an alias to mtsrand, or whatever, Mersenne Twister algorithm. I know there's been some changes there. I want to get Lee on the podcast. I'm trying to like warm him up and butter him up and be like, come on, you should come on the podcast. We'll talk about random number stuff. Because random things are great. But I do want to, at least before we start wrapping up, I do want to at least touch on some 7.2 features that are already coming down the pipe. In fact, there's been a couple that have already been implemented. Not too many like really super exciting one, like, oh, the like new syntax, the neat thing that will like short. Oh, by the way, the number one thing that I keep hearing from people that they want to see in the next version of PHP is short lambdas, like little closures that look like ES6 style sort of closure stuffs. I can't remember. I think there was an RFC for that recently that didn't make it, right?
Yeah, for sake of argument, I just don't understand why you'd want to do one thing two ways.
So it's actually different.
Well,
it is different.
Even with the ES6, like I understand like the context, but if you can achieve something even with a few more lines of code, I just never understood. It just seems so confusing to beginners.
Pause. So I'm actually writing a successor RFC to the one that failed, and I'm nearly putting it towards discussion. So like we're really close. Things might change from now until then, but let me find some. I pulled a real world example. This is the first piece of code I could find on GitHub that closed over a variable with use and did a single expression in its body and returned that. So its specific definition would be like function taking one parameter x, use this variable called array, return array sub x. That's it. Like that's the whole function. And the reason people care about short closures is that excluding any white space you may have written in there, that takes 38 characters to do 8 characters of work. Like, think about that. 30 extra characters of boilerplate to do 8 characters of work. If you write this style very often, that's the problem, right? Like, if it's a one-liner, or not even a one-liner, but if, let's say it's like you're doing a bunch of object-oriented stuff, and you do this one callback, you're right, it's not a problem on that one callback. The problem is if you're trying to do a filter, map, reduce, you know, a bunch of things like this in a row, and all of a sudden you have 90 plus characters of stuff there doing nothing that make it difficult. And if, and the ironic thing is, if you remove all of that stuff and go back to for each loops, is it's like half the code runs twice as fast, and like all these things, right? Like that's the motivation. Like the point is, the language as it currently is makes it painful to write that kind of code. So that's the motivation, is that it's not really an option. Like, yes, you're right, you can do it today, but it's like inflicting pain on your on you, all future maintainers of that code. And so yeah, that's sort of the motivation of having the shorter closures, is that it allows you to use them more frequently, because you can't afford to pay 30 characters of overhead every time you do a closure if, say, in a given routine you use 5 or 6 closures, right? I mean, you just blew up the code exponentially, seemingly. I did the math. It's not quite exponential, because there are only so many keywords you can throw in there for those things, but it's a huge overhead. So if you can get that, if you can get that number of characters, say you're doing 8 characters of work, and you can get that down to, like, say, you know, 11 characters total to do 8 characters of work, that's a lot better, and it actually lets you do that. So
I do think that there's some value in that extra syntax when it explicitly shows what scope you're enclosing, right? The use there has value. On the other hand, it's also just a lot more work when you don't necessarily need
it.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Say you're writing a function that literally returns in array the parameter you gave, and you closed over some parameter, right? Like, you took you more symbols to declare, and it's one expression. You could have audited that very quickly to determine what it is. So yeah, you're right, there is some value to having it explicit, but it's also just a big pain when in certain other contexts.
I think we'll forever disagree on this, but my one point is that I have my text editor just folds things that are too long, so I never have issues with writing stuff. And always my biggest concern, I hear some people echo it on the mailing list, is I hope that PHP can stay people's first language. PHP was like my first, like, I had played with other things, but it was my first language that I built something with. And I always worry that if I go back and 16-year-old Sean looked at a modern PHP snippet, that he would be very confused. So that's always the worry in the bottom of my heart when I see, like, RFCs come up. Like, I never vote no on things, because it's like, if you have, like, you should only be positive and contribute positivity to new features. But that's always my concern with seeing new things. Like, I hope that, you know, PHP doesn't in 5 years become the language that, like, dies out because it becomes too difficult for beginners.
Plus one on that, yeah.
Yeah, Sketch chimed in on Twitter, said, just to stir the pot, can we get the standard library in its own std namespace in PHP 8 so the entire language isn't needed?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So it's actually, it's funny, not too far off. If we were to rewrite the standard library in PHP, yeah, we could namespace it all under like either STD or PHP or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but yeah, and, Sammy, but then we have to bike shit over what is standard library and what is language core and
The opportunities for bike shedding are endless. Yeah, this sounds amazing.
I know, that sounds like an opportunity for more contributions. Now I'm all for it. I think we should rewrite it.
Absolutely. But then there's the mantra, if it can be written in user land, then it shouldn't be added to core, right?
Oh, man, that's another one I love seeing. That every time
you hear,
like,
that all the
why
time.
Why can't this string function be in a helper library, not why does it have to be in core? Yeah, no, I'm one of those people. It's almost like, because if you add something to the core, then you take on the responsibility of maintaining it and everything else. It seems like whatever responsibility you can push on other people. I like taking the Golang thing. We're just saying everything else is other people's problems. Don't fix our problems. Blame it on other people.
I think historically part of it is that nobody wanted to maintain. Like, it's a distribution issue. Yeah. Before Composer really came along, code, like, library and framework reuse was there, but, like, not anywhere near it is today, right? So to have your little array column, for instance, we added in 5.5, I'm so irritated that we this function does, like, 4 different behaviors total, depending on what you pass in. But, like, you know, if that didn't go into core, who's going to use it? Like, even if it is useful, right? So now we have better distribution through Composer is sort of becoming the de facto package manager for PHP. So it's maybe not as much of an issue now, but historically, I mean, that was a really valid concern. It's like, who's going to use it if you write it as a library, even if it solves a problem that hundreds of developers across the world hit? It's like, well, nobody's going to do that.
Right. Well, we really do have to wrap it up. I'm sorry. We've gone a little bit over time here. But there was this huge section that I'm going to copy and paste for another episode, but it was all of the deprecations that Nikita Popov has proposed for 7.1. He typically 7-2. Goes and rounds up all the things he wants to see killed with a Viking funeral, and everybody votes on him. So far, there's been a lot of really, I would like it to see a discussion on some of these things, but one of the things that's on the chopping block for the deprecation is actually been pulled out and put into its own RFC, not pulled in with the others, and it is our beloved B that we add to string literals, the binary casting that was added in PHP 6, which is now a vestigial syntax that we like to just add to troll our code bases. It's on the chopping block for being deprecated officially. So we'll talk about that in another episode. So let's typically wrap things up with a developer shout out, but I dropped the ball on getting our sponsor for this episode. I apologize. We should have a sponsor for next episode, and we'll do a developer shout out. So since we're not doing that, I would like to shout out to Chris Shaw, who contributed the show notes for episode 58, which is HTTP plug, Guzzle, and APIs. And if you'd like to contribute to the show notes, go to github.com/phproundtable. You'll see a repo there called show-notes. And we got some shameless plugs we got to do here. I'm gonna start off with maybe Davey to see if you've got anything that you'd like to shamelessly promote as we wrap things up.
So I guess I kind of have two things. One is a complete shameless plug. I released my first WordPress plugin. It's the Akamai integration. It is a beta that went out last week. I'm super happy with this. So if you are using Akamai on WordPress, you should go check that out. And then the second one is kind of more related to this, which is that we will be having release manager nominations for 7.2 coming up soon. I don't know when exactly, but if you are interested, it is a lot of fun. It's a lot of responsibility. Like, I'm terrified I'm going to break the internet in yet another way. But it's a great thing to do. It's a great thing for the community. And if you are interested and you feel like you have any sort of management capabilities, really is about managing processes. It's not about managing people or actually writing code. So if you think that's something you can do, look out for it on the mailing list and get involved.
I'm surprised you've gone this entire episode without switching into the British accent.
I'm an American now. Like, that happened.
When he first got on the call, I started with a British accent to see if I could throw him off. But nope. Sticking to the American accent. Sweet. Levi, do you have anything you want to promote?
Just that I'm going to have an RFC soon called Arrow Functions that follows up to Short Closers. We already mentioned it briefly, but there's a lot of potential bike shedding on that feature because when you make things shorter, it's like you don't want to do what Sean mentioned and, you know, make it inaccessible to beginners and not intuitive and things like that. So I'm open to feedback on that. And just because I'm proposing a draft soon, maybe even go out today, doesn't mean that what I've picked is set in stone. I've actually collaborated really heavily on this with a lot of people already, so it's the best thing I've come up with so far as a successor to Bob's Short Closer. So that's all I have to promote.
Well, hopefully you'll make some money on that, because I've seen on Twitter where people have put up $1,000 bounties to get
I saw people, and I'm serious. And, you know, of course, if it's going to happen, then we're going to be talking details. Well, they didn't implement it exactly like JavaScript did, so no bounty. You're not going to bike shed that generosity.
For sure. How about you, Sean? Do you have anything you want
to
promote?
The only thing, one thing I'd like to see PHP developers get better at is using a debugger. One of the things that I wrote is called Therac. It is a web interface xdebug. So you can be on the other side of the world and two people can be pull up a web page and look at the same stack trace and step through the code. So if you get a chance, check out on Sean-Dur. It's called Therac, and it's a paired debugger. And it's one of the things I wish people would use more when I work with other developers. They always, you know, bar dump instead of pull out xdebug. So that's the only thing I got to push.
Can you pop that on Twitter?
Oh, sorry, I don't have a Twitter. I will drop a link in the chat here if anyone wants to try to sell it for me.
Absolutely. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And speaking of debugging, I'm going to be giving a talk at PHP Tech talking about debugging. We're going to be doing step debugging in PHP Storm, the IDE that everybody loves. But that's May 24th through the 26th. I'm also going to be giving a talk about writing tests for PHP Source. So two brand new talks I've never given before. Hopefully you'll see at PHP Tech. And if you're at PHP Tech, stick around for the weekend. The USA Grand Nationals NASD Swing and Shag event is that weekend in a hotel that's like 20 minutes away. So if you've been thinking about getting involved in dance, you can combine your passions of programming and dancing together in one weekend, in one week. Also, I'll be at Midwest PHP speaking about bringing old legacy apps to PHP 7, and I'll be talking about my journey to the center of PHP, and that's March 17th to the 18th. So two great events coming up. Hopefully we'll see you there. And I'd like to thank Davey, Levi, Sean, and nobody else is on the panel, but I'd like to thank you three for joining us, and sorry for going over time, but thanks again for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
The PHP Roundtable is recorded live using Google Hangouts On Air. If you'd like to get more information about the live broadcasts, visit phproundtable.com. While you're on the site, join the mailing list to get notified about the next live episode. And hey, maybe even join the conversation at the roundtable. We'd love to hear what you have to say. The theme music is provided by BenSound at bensound.com. The PHP Roundtable logo was designed by Clint McManaman, and you can find him at mcmanaman.co. That's mcmanaman.co. Thanks for listening. I'm Sammy K. Powers, and I hope you'll join us for the next episode.